Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I'm joined by Dave Haslam, writer, broadcaster, DJ, resident of the Hacienda and many, many, many other events and nights and stories, all of which we touch upon on today's episode. You're in for a real treat today. We talk about some great records as well. And before we get on with the episode, just a few thank yous. A huge thank you to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. I'd also like to thank 76 for producing this podcast, who's been up against it in lockdown, because as I'm sure you're aware, you podcast listeners, that most stuff's recorded remotely now. So it's extra pressure on the producer to get your podcast sounding as close to two people sitting in the studio together as possible, and 76 has been doing a wonderful job, so thank you. If this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track podcast, once you've finished this episode with Dave, then why not have a look in the archives, because you'll have access to over 180 episodes where I talk to all manner of actors, producers, DJs, musicians, from the likes of, oh, where to start, James Lavelle to Maxine Peake to Amanda Abington to Chuck D to the Deftones to Chic. Go and have a rummage in the archives, and I'm sure you'll find some episodes that will tickle your fancy. And if that's not enough, I have a Patreon page as well where you can support the podcast and get access to hundreds of other episodes. I put up 4 radio shows each week over there, and video episodes and unique Patreon episodes as well. So there's loads of stuff over there. And by signing up there for as little as, I think it's about £7 a month, you get, 4 or 5 extra shows a week. So fundamentally, you're helping sustain and support this podcast. So any help over on Patreon is really, really appreciated. Okay, you can find out about all of this stuff and merch as well, offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. That's off the beat and, not an, and track.com. Right, that's enough waffle from me. Let's get some grade A waffle from today's wonderful guest. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with the magnificent Dave Haslam.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we are recording. Joining me today via the means of Zoom is Dave Haslam. Hello.
Hi, Stu. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Where are you today?
I'm in sunny Manchester.
Is it sunny?
It is sunny, yeah. It's sunny but cold. But, things are good. You know what I mean? Things are good.
For listeners that are wondering when we're recording this, we're approaching 6 months into lockdown in whatever stage we're in or wherever it's going. Have you found it, Dave, as a human and as a creative?
Well, as a human and creative. Well, as a creative, I was my diary emptied. I mean, all my DJ gigs, my book events, all the stuff that I do on stage, live, middle of March, it all emptied. Then things got put in the diary for September and then all got taken out again. So it's been quite difficult because I've been able to do a lot of writing, which I like, but that's a solitary job I can do at home. But the DJing is something that I've been doing for 35 years, and I love getting out the house, playing my favourite music loudly, meeting people, that whole community feeling. So I guess as a human, it meant I felt a little bit isolated, like a lot of people have, a bit claustrophobic. You know, I had gigs in Germany and Paris and other places, and so I'm really disappointed to miss out on the travel. You know, but I'm still here, and I'm hoping the diary will be filled next year and we can all move on and do what we love to do.
Is there anything sort of happening? I mean, I did see Luke Unabomber was doing something in Manchester. Is there events starting to sort of open in different, you know, different kind of styles? And, you know, what's been happening in the kind of the rethinking? I mean, I run a venue myself and have done for many years, and we're struggling to think how we can adapt. Just wonder what's happening in Manchester.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Luke Unabomber and a bit of a team have put together something called Freight Island, which is in a big, big space behind Piccadilly Station. It's open air, mostly open air. And in fact, I DJed there for him a couple of weeks ago. No dancing allowed, which was okay. You know, that gave me a chance to play a lot of stuff that I probably haven't played out for ever. Really well run table service. So it's a different way of having a night out, but at least people get to see each other. And, you know, I get to play some tunes. But I think that going forward, I think a lot of venues, as you probably, you know, have been thinking of yourself, I mean, a lot of them in a way are having to become, in a way, event spaces, you know, more than limiting to live venue or club venue. And a lot of my friends in Manchester who run clubs, you know, we're talking about live streaming from their stage, you know, opening up the venue daytime to maybe other things, you know, everything from kind of, you know, yoga to band rehearsal space. You know, I'm just, the thing is that people are very resourceful, and people who love nightlife and who work in nightlife, they're used to making something out of nothing. I mean, we're mostly independents, aren't we? We're mostly undercapitalized. So, you know, we're used to going into some dingy basement and turning that into a life-changing experience, you know? So if we can do that, then I think we can do anything. And I think the other thing is that human beings are always going to want to go out. So all we've got to do is put our resourcefulness to the forefront, and when the time is right, people will come back out.
100%. Okay, track one. What's the song with the greatest ever intro, Dave?
I'm going to have to get my list, or you're going to have to remind me.
I haven't got it in front of me. Sorry.
Right, I will, because I did make this list, and you know, just for transparency for the listeners. You know, I did send them over to you, and we haven't talked about them. But anyway, Magazine, The Light Pours Out of Me, is my favourite intro. Do you play it on your podcast?
We have a Spotify playlist to accompany all of the tracks on it.
That's fantastic. Everyone can dig into that. It was out in 1978. I was 16. I was at that age where I think you're particularly porous, in the sense that all experiences and all music make an impact in a way that when you get a bit older, you become a little bit caged, you know, and you kind of, you know what you like. And but when you're 16, you don't know what you like. And I think quite a few of the tunes that I've chosen today are things that go back to that kind of era. What I like about this is we'd had punk. I was 14. I was maybe a little bit too young to understand punk. As far as I was concerned, you know, Paranoid by Black Sabbath was still kind of a great record. And then as punk morphed into something a little bit different, you know, with bands like The Pop Group and Joy Division, and in this case magazine, I began to see a little bit more. I could relate a bit more to the music. It seemed a bit more creative to me. And this starts, you know, you just get the drum, draws you in. Then the very rudimentary, in a way, bass sound, Barry Adamson, John McGeoch on guitar, the layers start coming in. McGeoch is a fantastic guitarist, went on to be in Susie and the Banshees. And then Howard Devoto, you know, time flies, time crawls like an insect up and down the walls. And by that time, you're totally kind of, you're moved physically and you're kind of intrigued mentally by the whole experience. You know, and then it kind of hits the first chorus and the keyboards come in. And I think it's the intriguingness of it that I like, you know, the way it just draws you in. And next thing you know, it's quite a long track, 4.5 minutes, I think, or more. And it just, yeah, it just draws you in. And so that is my favourite intro.
How much thought went into that? Was that instant, or was there any other kind of honourable considerations or mentions?
For other songs? Let me think. Well, I mean, as a DJ, you know, you do kind of listen out for, you know, song intros that become all important. You know, I think it's like the memorable ones for me, the kind of call to arms, you know. Things like Ain't Nobody, for example, you know, and the way that fades in, you know, which is, you know, you're used to something go whoosh, but Ain't Nobody fades in. And so that was another one that I considered. Yeah, for sure.
What a record that is as well.
Yeah, I mean, for me as a DJ, I think it's probably my most played tune. I mean, I've been a DJ 35 years, you know, so I like to play a lot of new stuff. But then as a DJ, you have the records in your box that are timeless.
You get out of jail free cards, don't they?
Kind of, yeah. And I've said before, I think that with Ain't Nobody by Rufus and Chaka Khan, it's like the canary in the mine. You know, back in the old days when the miners went down the coal mine, there were quite a lot of, you know, poisonous gases in the environment. And they take a canary, which obviously is a lot more sensitive to poisonous gas, down in a cage, down the mine. And if the canary fell off its perch, they knew that miners knew, get out quick, you know. And I kind of think that if I ever play Ain't Nobody and no one dances, I'm basically in a bad environment. And I should make for the nearest fire exit because it's never going to work.
You're in trouble if that's not working. For track two, Dave, I'm going to ask you the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
The track I've picked is The Four Tops, Reach Out, I'll Be There. I mean, when I was growing up in the 60s, Motown was everywhere. You know, you'd go to the football, you'd hear it before the football, you'd go to the fairground and, you know, the rough.
Where was this, Dave? Where was home?
In Birmingham, where I grew up. And, you know, all the rough lads on the fairground, you know, when you went on the, you know, on the waltzers, and Motown would be, you know, screeching from the little PA. And maybe in town, you know, you'd walk past the Greasy Spoon Cafe, and if they had a jukebox, it would be Motown. It would be, you know, Tears of a Clown. It'd be the Supremes. It would, you know, be all that was the soundtrack, really. And so I guess it was, I think I probably could have picked one or two other Motown tracks I could have picked, maybe, you know, there's lots of stuff by the Supremes. And it was music that's so, I think it made an impact on me because it's so simple, I mean, and direct and concise.
And the emotion would have been what?
The emotion, well, the emotion of the, so much Motown, the emotion is mixed, and that is the interesting thing. Reach Out, I'll Be There is an exuberant record full of joy. But actually, it's a song about, you know, people feeling lonely and trying to connect with each other. So I think I knew that there was sadness and I knew there was happiness, but I didn't realise that 2.5 minutes of music could somehow mix the two of them up. And so that, I think, is probably why that particular record stood out for me. And, you know, obviously you hear the records again in it, and in a lot of ways, you know, they still resonate. And I remember when I was about seven or eight, my little party piece was basically to kind of dress up ridiculously and mime to Motown. I mean, there was no karaoke then.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Jackson 5 as well a little bit later on. So, yeah, I think it's incredible music. And a few years ago, I bought a jukebox and I just filled it with Motown.
Yeah.
I thought, if I've got 50 Motown singles, what else do you need?
Yeah.
You know? And they sound great on a jukebox, because the other thing about them being so simply made is that they're made for jukeboxes and they're made for radio. So, you know, it's clear.
Yeah.
And the bass is heavy and the melody's strong and the voice cuts right through. You know, so, yeah, so, yeah, that's the one that made the impact.
And aside from sort of when you was out and about here in Motown, you know, you mentioned at the fair and things like that, growing up at home, what sort of music was there music on at home? And if so, what was it? What were you exposed to by, like, you know, parents
and
stuff?
Well, I think it was, my parents were into music, but I've always thought what's interesting in a way about their generation is that I think my parents were the last generation before rock and roll. They married in 1957. By 1963, as the Beatles and the Rolling Stones were breaking through, they had 3 children under the age of 4, you know? So there's no way they were going to tune in and drop out. You know, there was no way they were going to get involved with rock and roll. You know, my dad had to go out to work and my mum had to look after us. And so they didn't really get it. And why would they, you know? But they listened to, you know, mostly classical music at home. But they, you know, it wasn't a musical environment. None of us, you know, knew how to play an instrument or whatever. But I had an older sister who's 2.5 years older than me. Well, I still have, bless her. And I think she was probably the biggest influence on my music taste evolving, because, she was older. And so she went to a youth club. You know, I was still 10 or 11 and she'd come back and, you know, she'd have Bowie and Mott the Hoople and Rod Stewart and the Faces. And she was the one who'd make us all sit down and watch Top of the Pops. And, you know, very soon I realised that there were some things on there that made a load of sense to me, you know, like Motown. And then Slade came along, you know, fantastic. And the stylistics, I used to love all the kind of the Black American soul groups on Top of the Pops, had just brilliant kind of day glow suits on and little dance routines. So I think, and then as my sister got older, then she started taking me to gigs. But then, like you do, I began to then think, well, I want to define my own identity. So she got a bit folky, you know, Fairport Convention and Neil Young. So I went a bit punky and, you know, The Clash and everything else that followed, the Buzzcocks. So I think it was probably her taste. I remember reading something by that Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones had once said, that when the Stones started touring the country, they would always love it if there were some cool girls there, because they just said that they found that in every town, the girls were cooler than the boys. the boys would kind of shout about being cool and get down the front and would hassle the band and would wait behind for the band and would start a band. But actually the ones with the best ears were the cool girls. So, you know, I think my sister and her friends fitted into that category. And still, when I DJ, in fact, I started a night in Manchester in 1992 on a Friday night, playing disco, funk, rare groove. Everyone else was playing heavy techno. And I thought, well, I need to refresh everyone's ears on a Friday night. And me and Elliot and Jason, who DJed with me, we decided that any record where girls left the dance floor and boys got on the dance floor, we would never play again. And after 12 weeks, we had a killer playlist, and the night went weekly for 7.5 years.
What were some of the songs on that?
Cheryl Lynn, Got to Be Real, Young Disciples, Apparently Nothing, Candy Staton, You've Got the Love. Music that was a mix of the throwback stuff, Jackson Sisters, I Believe in Miracles, mixed with the Mowax, Talking Loud, and that's kind of more acid jazz, trip-hop type stuff that came through the 90s. And we kind of mashed up the two of them. And the idea was that on a Saturday night, yeah, I mean, I was playing a lot of house on a Saturday, so the idea was that our Friday night was a kind of a warm-up. And at that point in Manchester, people were going out, you know, at least twice a week. So they'd come to our night on a Friday and then, you know, somewhere else on a Saturday. And that was, you know, the 48-hour party people.
Just going back a little bit to watching Top of the Pops and you know, and getting into music, like, was you any different from your friends in regards to your passion for music, or was you quite obsessive?
Well, good question. I mean, I liked, I was drawn to, I think my friendship groups were based around music, really, you know. Everyone was quite tribal. And so in that sense, you know, I hung out with other people who were excited about the new Buzzcocks single. It was kind of what glued us all together. And, you know, then you would go out with that same group. But I think that the one thing I think from an early age, I think looking back, what was different about how I was experiencing music was that I was interested in the kind of instant appeal of it, but also the mechanics of it in a way that most people weren't. You know, most people would go out, say if you went to a gig, you know, like I remember going to see Blondie in 1978. I was 16, you know, amazing, a small club. And I know that everyone around me had as, you know, deep a passion for Blondie and loved the night as much as me. But in addition to that, I remember thinking, what's happening here? What's going on here? Who are the people around me? What's this tribe? Who is this Debbie Harry? You know, where does she come from? She was like a creature from another planet, you know?
She was sent from a god, she was.
Yeah. And I'm like, and how, in everything from like, you know, the way the guitarist was stood and the lighting and the layout. So it's like I wanted to see how it was working. So it wasn't just, you know, watching in 3D. I wanted the 4D experience. I wanted to know. And I think that's that way that I was intrigued and analysed it. I think that was what made my experience of listening to music different to the people I was hanging out with. We were listening to the same music, but I was just, yeah, I wanted to know more. You know, and through Debbie Harry, I was like, okay, so it's New York, it's CBGBs. And through that experience, you know, I probably discovered Talking Heads, Television, Patti Smith, and back in time, Velvet Underground, Andy Warhol, Art. You know, so from that one night at Barbarella's in Birmingham, I probably ended up, that was the door in a way opened for me to be interested in all those other bands and the art scene and the New York scene and you know, yeah, so that was the extra dimension that I think I was experiencing, you know, even at that really relatively young age. And I'm still like that when I go out, you know, and, you know, became a music reviewer for NME, and I had a fanzine, and I became a DJ. And I think that just the desire and training yourself up to just think about everything connected with a piece of music, I think is really important as a DJ. You know, when I started DJing, I realized that every piece of music, it wasn't just about the music. It was like, what does it stand for?
Yeah.
What sounds like it? Who will like it? Where does it come from? All those questions are important when you're programming music in a club. It's not just, you know, what are the BPMs? That's probably the least important question. And so, yeah, from an early age, my instincts and my brain were just going really deep into it all.
Well, let's go back to them informative years. And for track three, the song reminds you of your time at school.
I picked Third World, Now That We've Found Love. It's not, you know, it's not one of those classic records that you hear everywhere now. Although it was big at the time, I think, you know, it was on Top of the Pops. But the reason I picked that was because I have a very strong memory of the record being played and the girls at school having this fantastic dance routine for it. And again, it goes back to what I was saying about cool girls, you know. I mean, a lot of the lads at school, you know, they would like their Pink Floyd and their Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin, you know, and as I did. And for us, I think we thought at this point, I mean, I was whatever it was, 11, 12, maybe a bit older. I was mostly consuming music. I wasn't going out at that point. I wasn't old enough to go out. And I thought consuming music meant you listened to it in your bedroom or you watched it on Top of the Pops. Or you kind of heard it accidentally, you know, at the football or the fairground. But seeing the girls dancing to this song made me realise that there was a way of interacting with music that was much more, which was about dance and about that reaction, you know. And it wasn't I guess you would call, you know, cerebral. It wasn't about the mind. It was about the body. Yeah. And, I was just a little lad trying to work out what my testosterone was saying to me. And, you know, it also made, it kind of introduced me to that whole, it just was sexy and it was brilliant. And it was just like the bass line and again, the very simple, very positive lyric. It just put me in a really good place, you know, and so that's what reminds. Yeah, that is a very strong memory of my school days.
What did you want to be when you was at school, Dave?
I wanted to be a writer, I think, especially when I was 14, 15. I read a lot, and. I wanted to be a writer. I mean, I used to go to secondhand bookshops. I used to go to bookshops and record shops, basically. And I spent all my pocket money on books and records. But once again, with books, I remember in the same way as my interest in records took me to kind of more specialist record shops and, you know, began to listen to John Peel and, you know, hear the more marginal stuff. Get away from Top of the Pops a little bit. I think with my book reading, similarly, you know, I would kind of go down and kind of discover, you know, French novelists in translation and Germans and, you know, weird American stuff. And it felt like my education was through books and music and then film, you know, going to watch, you know, early Martin Scorsese films and Dustin Hoffman in The Graduate and, you know, those kind of films. I kind of felt like that was teaching me about life or at least, you know, making me want to be part of all that world, really.
You mentioned about records and that. So let's, for track four, let's find out. What was the first record you remember buying, Dave?
T-Rex, Telegram Sam.
Oh, what? That's a great record to start with.
It is.
This is normally the one where you have something dreadfully uncool. You pulled a cracker out there.
It's a great record. I remember there was a back in the early mid-70s and afterwards, you could buy records from obviously HMV, places like that on the high street, and then maybe there'd be other record shops, but also you could buy them from Woolworths, and news agents would have them on racks. And they'd often be, I guess they got them from kind of cash and carry or something, and they'd be ex-jukebox records. And so they'd be slightly cheaper than the ones at Woolworths or HMV. 7-inch only, with the hole cut out. And, you know, when I was 10, maybe, I think it was 10, when I started buying records from the newsagent there, you know, it was probably half my pocket money at least. My sister had a bit of a collection. So, you know, I just started buying records. And it wasn't the experience that, you know, I mean, I think record shops, you know, are fantastic places that have, you know, given me so many great records, so many good experiences. And I always say that actually the Manchester record shops of the late 80s into the 90s, Piccadilly Records, Eastern Bloc, Manchester Underground, Spin In, without them, the Manchester scene would never have happened. So, you know, I soon had to go beyond the news agent to find the records I wanted. You know, I moved up to Manchester in 1980, aged 18, to go to uni. So I very soon, you know, arrived in Manchester having spent my teenage years or my early teenage years in Birmingham. And when I arrived in Manchester, the first thing I did was to find, where are the record shops? Where are the alternative bookshops? And where are the little venues where, you know, the small bands and the emerging bands play? And, you know, and actually what I found was that the Manchester music scene was in a way very small in 1980. You know, all the stuff that we now think of as kind of iconic, you know, Factory Records and, you know, Joy Division and The Fall and all those groups, you know, they were actually part of a small scene, and it was very approachable scene. And I very soon started. Yeah. I mean, record shops at that point were places that you could go to and, you know, and you'd see the flyers and the posters for gigs coming up, and, you know, they were hubs of information. I was trying to think of the first album that I got, but I was very late into albums. It was always, I think, you know, for my first 5 or 6 years of buying records, it was singles. And then I think I bought Electric Ladyland by Jimi Hendrix. And the first 12-inch record I ever bought was Hip Hop Bebop, Don't Stop by Man Parish.
What a record that is.
I think you should put that on the Spotify.
Oh, it's going on, mate. Any excuse to play that again.
And I walked into HMV and it was playing, and I just thought, I have to have this. I just couldn't believe how different it was, and it made a huge impact on me. Very minimalist. I've not heard anything like that before. And I mean, that record, you know, I was still probably 7 years away from being a DJ when I bought that record. Maybe not quite that, maybe 3 or 4. But, you know, it was all one of those records that I knew as soon as I started DJing, this is going to be a record that I play a lot.
Yeah.
And if you listen to it now, you know, it does prefigure a lot of the minimal, you know, early techno house. It's kind of got that. It's a warehouse party record, you know, as well as a B-boy spin on your head record. And actually it was put, I don't know if it would have sounded so good on 7. It needed the space that a 12-inch pressing.
100%. 100%.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Well, while we're talking about great records to hear in clubs, for track 5, the song that soundtracked your years in Clubland, you're still well involved in Clubland, so you've got a lot of time to, you know, and a lot of space to choose from.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because at the moment, you know, my choices are kind of, you know, in a way they're all from yesteryear, you know, and I do have to point out that if people come and hear me DJ, they do have to understand that, you know, I reckon half the records that I play now have been made in the last 5 years, you know. I don't really like doing retro nights. I don't really like getting involved with the Hacienda reunions. I like the idea.
Well, why is that, Dave?
Well, I mean, my Hacienda years started. My first residency was 1986. That year, I started doing every Thursday and every Saturday in the club. And my Thursdays lasted 5 years. And then I went back again in 96. I did nearly 500 nights at the Hacienda. And the last thing that was ever in my mind was to be predictable. The first thing was always, how can I get the dance floor into a place where I can drop this record that they've never heard before and it will change their lives? You know, it was, sounds quite ambitious, but that's what DJing for me was about. And the spirit of the Hacienda was about being different and pioneering and unpredictable and new. New all the time, new stuff. That's why I was at Eastern Bloc Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday with my money, saying to Eastern Bloc, what's come in from Chicago, Detroit, Italy, Belgium, London? What's come in? What can I play? What can I play at the Hacienda that will blow their minds that they've never heard before? And that's why I love the club, and I think that's why the club was successful, and that's why it should be remembered. So the idea of turning up somewhere and playing a load of records from 30 years ago to an audience who've heard them before and just want to hear them and nothing else, to me, is almost the direct opposite of the spirit of the Hacienda.
Yeah.
And occasionally I do nights Hacienda themed, but I then throw in extra stuff. In my head, I'm thinking, if the Hacienda was open on Saturday and I was still the resident DJ, what would I play?
Yeah.
And that's how I approach the Hacienda night. And so I don't really get involved in any of the retro, old school nights, you know. So although my choices, you know, for ye today, you know, are quite retro, it's because, you know, it's kind of, these are the tunes that shaped the rest of my life, but they're not necessarily the records that I would listen to or play now.
Just quickly before we move on to track six,
I haven't even mentioned what track five is yet.
Sorry, it wasn't Man Parish. Sorry,
no, it was Shannon. Let the Music Play.
What a record!
So that'll light up the Spotify playlist. I mean, a fantastic record. I mean, when I started at the Hacienda. I did quite a few one-offs before I got a residency. And then when I did the night I was talking to you about before, at the Boardwalk in the 90s, you know, when I was, you know, trying to do a Friday night that brought in a load of music that wasn't being played by anyone else, I brought this record back. Because it just has, it's just got such a great vibe about it. And it's not overplayed. I mean, as you know what it's like. I mean, some people want to hear the same records all the time, but for me, some of my favourite records have been kind of ruined by being overplayed.
Definitely.
So a record like this, still underground, isn't it? It's still an underground record. And you know, it's brilliant production. You know, and you can even hear it. It's the kind of tune that influenced, you know, Pet Shop Boys, for example. You know, that New York Bobby O sound. So
definitely,
yeah, great record.
Just interesting hearing you talk about that, because I know I'm talking to a DJ, obviously. But generally, people answer that question: what makes them dance? And you've chose songs that you've enjoyed making other people dance playing. What would get you on the dance floor?
Lots of different stuff. When the moment takes me, I do. A couple of years ago, I was playing. I went 6,000 miles to do a night on an island in the Indian Ocean called La Reunion. It's a French island, French colony. So they take Euros, which is weird. Took me 14 hours or something on a plane to get there. And it was a big electronic dance music festival on this island. And it was great. And there were some brilliant DJs. But as ever, I think I was headlining one of the tents on the Friday night. And I was playing a lot of, you know, electronic music, going back to Man Parish, but also, you know, Paranoid London, lots of new stuff, Caribou. And then at one point I was just like, I need to do something that these people are going to really make their, you know, sort the men out from the boys and the, you know, the girls out from the part-timers. And I played I Want to Be Your Dog by the Stooges. You know, and I knew I'm the only DJ who's going to come to an electronic dance music festival in the Indian Ocean and play the Stooges. But, you know, I'll be remembered. It might not be the biggest record or, you know, it's not might not fill the floor, but I need to lay my marker down and say, if you're in my team, this is also a great record. And I put it on and about a third of the audience left the tent. And the other two-thirds just went bananas to the point where I actually felt like I need to jump off stage and get into the mosh pit. And I did. So I left the decks. It's not a long record. So the biggest risk was that I wouldn't be able to get back yeah. and play the next record. But I just thought, I want to enjoy this moment, you know, and as much as these kids are. So, yeah, the right moment. My thing is, I don't think I've ever played a record that I wouldn't have danced to. You know, I've never played a record I don't love. I've never played a record I wouldn't dance to. I've always thought, in terms of programming music, I've always thought, okay, if I was on the dance floor now, where would I want? What do I want to hear next? What should be the next flavor, if you like. You know, what should be the next mood? Where should we go from here? Should we go, you know, more pumping, higher, older, newer, more acid, less acid, bit of guitars, bit quieter, something a bit more, you know, a bit more emotional, something, or something harder? And I'm like that, and I'm thinking, well, where do you need to go to really go on that cliche, the journey, you know? And I feel like if I didn't appreciate the music that I play as much as I did, I wouldn't be able to understand and put myself in that situation.
I don't think anyone's ever answered that question any better than that, Dave. Track 6, favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Well, now that I've been in Manchester for 40 years, I think I'm entitled to choose New Order. True Faith, I think, is the track that I would play. I mean, New Order absolutely have soundtracked my life. I mean, more than soundtracked, they've kind of driven my life in a lot of ways. I heard, I saw Joy Division play 3 times. You know, they were an amazing act, fantastic albums, incredible live. I mean, always on the edge of falling apart, which is okay. We all are, that's life. And then they came back with New Order. And I think the first big interview I ever did in the NME was with New Order. Obviously, I worked at the Hacienda, which was their club. And then 4 or 5 years ago, I worked with them on a big project for Manchester International Festival, where we reimagined the New Order back catalogue for a synthesizer orchestra. And the band and the synthesizer orchestra played together at the old Granada TV studios. So I got to work with the band and, you know, very intimately, and that was a fantastic experience. And it was like, it felt like, you know, I mentioned earlier about being that lad kind of stood watching a gig thinking, what's going on here? And, you know, but really being deeply into it, but being on the outside of what was going on, yeah, and trying to understand it. And I kind of feel like with the New Order thing that I did, it was almost like that was the journey. That was my life. You know, I'd gone from being the passionate, interested, intrigued young man kind of looking through the window at this world that absolutely fascinated me, to being in the middle of that world and making stuff happen in that world. And New Order really being that, yeah, they've been the vehicle really, and they've been the soundtrack for that lifetime's work, I guess.
Wonderful.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Dave, I'm going to ask you to be DJ now, and for track 7. It's a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
Well, I picked a jazz record from 1957 because I've spent most of the summer listening to jazz from 1957, and I'll explain why, because it does sound a bit odd. You know, I do a lot of writing. I've written 5 books, but my new project is small format books. So they're kind of an easy read. They're like a 30-minute read, small format book that you can put into your pocket. And I'm just writing about things I feel passionate about. So the first one was about vinyl collecting. The second one was about Keith Haring, the New York artist. The third one was this great stuff that I discovered about Courtney Love when she lived in Liverpool in 1982. And the book I've been working on all through lockdown is a book about the poet Sylvia Plath. And she, she visited Paris 3 times in 1956. And when you have a small format book like that, you can't tell the big story. You can't say everything there is to say about a subject. So you pick a kind of episode and you write about that really deeply. In a way, it's a bit like a single instead of an album. You know, it's not a big book you can spend 5 years writing.
Yeah.
It's something much more concise, 4 months' work. And when I write, I need to get into the zone. I have all kinds of little routines. I like to, you know, work at the same time every day. I go to a cafe bar, sit in the same table every day, have the same drink, you know, leave at the same time. It's quite bizarre. But the other thing is I need to have music that gets me to where I need to be. So the book is about Sylvia Plath in Paris in 1956. And that was a great era for jazz, and especially jazz in Paris. Paris was very forward-looking. And a lot of Black American musicians like Miles Davis loved going and playing in Paris. And obviously, you know, they were getting a warmer welcome there than they were back home, where there was still segregation and racism. And also Miles Davis loved French girls. So it kind of worked for everybody. And although Sylvia Plath was not into jazz, I needed to be in Paris thinking almost in a film way, a film soundtrack. I'm writing about Sylvia Plath walking around Paris, eating in restaurants, having encounters with people. And in my head, I'm thinking, this was a film, what would be playing? And I was thinking Miles Davis, bebop, Dizzy Gillespie. So the song that many may not know that I'd like them to hear is The Sunny Side of the Street by Dizzy Gillespie. The Sunny Side of the Street is a jazz standard. I mean, if you go on YouTube or Spotify, there's so many versions. But I love this particular version by Dizzy Gillespie for 2 reasons. One, the music, you know, it begins by sounding quite easy listening. But it isn't, you know, there's little discordant elements in it maybe. And then you think, oh, that's decent little instrumental. You know, Dizzy Gillespie, jazz trumpeter, does a great job. And then 4 minutes in, suddenly Dizzy Gillespie decides, oh, time for a vocal. And it's literally like the last 45 seconds of the song is him. I mean, he's not a great vocalist, but you can tell it's like, you can tell he's just like saying to the studio engineer, you know, you can't keep me away from the microphone. I need to sing this song. And he sings The Sunny Side of the Street. So I like the fact that the song has this kind of very odd structure to it, which is like a dance record, you know? It's like, you know, it's not verse, chorus, verse, chorus, verse, chorus, middle, 8, verse, chorus, end. And I love that. And the other thing was that Sylvia Plath is a poet who had a lot of issues in her life, a lot of struggles. You know, listeners may not know her work, but it got very dark. And in 1963, she killed herself. But in Paris, she had some incredible moments of happiness. And so the sunny side of the street, the song, and me being able to discover this tragic poet's happy moments put me in a great place at lockdown. So in a way, this is, although Sylvia probably would never have heard this tune, for me, this is like the story of her Paris trip. So, you know, the song has a lot of, it's this song which will remind me of lockdown in 2020, because I've been able to imagine myself not in lockdown in 2020, but in Paris in 1956.
Well, we'll ensure that it goes on the Spotify playlist, Dave. As we hopefully see ourselves coming out of lockdown, what are you most looking forward to?
Travel. I really hope that those DJ gigs in Paris and Germany are still there for me. I mean, I love going away, taking my music, meeting new people, sharing. It's all up for me. The music is, for me, it's always about sharing. That's what a DJ does. You know, you share the stuff that you love, and if you're a good DJ, you play it in such a way that the people on the dance floor will love it as much as you. And but at the same time, I've also got a gig that I need to do in the function room of a pub in Levensume, Manchester. And that'll be as much fun as a trip to Paris. So it's, yeah, put me behind the decks as soon as possible and fill the room with people, turn up the bass, and I'll be back to doing what I really love.
And if people want to find out where these gigs are going to be and everything else that you're up to and the books, where's the best place for them to go?
Probably Twitter, Mr_Dave_Haslam. And Facebook, social media. The website, davehaslam.com, has a listing of, you know, gigs, events, book events. There's no excuse, Stu.
Well, if you're happy for me to do it when I put this out, I'll tag you on it on the social media platforms, and then those that haven't followed you yet can then do so. Dave, it's been an absolute joy to talk to you about your records today. Thank you so much.
It's been great. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. There you go. What an absolute gentleman Dave was, and I expected nothing less than fantastic record choices from an absolute connoisseur of the DJ world, and yeah, absolutely lovely fella. So thanks ever so much to Dave, and thank you to you lot for listening. As mentioned at the beginning, if this is your first time listening, go and have a rummage in the archives, because you'll find stacks of episodes, you know, from the likes of, blimey, the Vaccines to the Wonder Stuff, to Jade Adams to James Acaster. Oh God, I can't think of what else I said at the beginning. But there's about 180 episodes with all your favourite musicians, actors, DJs and producers. So go and have a look. And I'll sign off on this bit. Have a lovely week, and look after each other. Be nice. And www.offthebeatandtrack.com. Bye-bye. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.com. .co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out, because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year, and they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out, because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track podcast.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.